Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two beautiful sponsors this week. Lynda.com, that's LYNDA.com/shoptalk, is a huge online learning resource with a new course published every single day on it. It's rather amazing. Check that out. And the 2014 In Control Conference. It's 2014.incontrolconference.com. We'll tell you more about that later in the show. But for now, let's kick things off.
Hello and welcome to another Shop Talk Show, a podcast about front-end fart sounds. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And with us, we have Dudley Story.
Thanks
for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
He didn't warn you about the sound. Sometimes they'll catch off guard.
No worries.
Sorry. Oh, today's off to a great start.
So let's run through the list. Canada.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Okay. New Zealand originally.
Yeah, okay.
That's
cool.
That's where the accent comes from.
Oh, from New Zealand.
I've been to New Zealand. You've been to Milwaukee.
We're all good. lived in Japan.
Hey, I lived in Japan.
That's right.
Where in Japan? That's the big question.
Hapo. It's outside of Nagano. Just before the Winter Olympics.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. Well, you're a man of multinationalities then.
Indeed. Fush and chops. That's what they say. Something like that. They say that one weird there, I guess.
Yeah.
It's different than it's like a difference between there and Australia, which is subtle. Instructor.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So what kind of setting? Is it university?
It's a polytechnic. So it's St. Polytechnic in Alberta, Canada. So it's a trade school, I suppose, would be the best way of putting it. It's
what are the ages?
Ages in my classes are anywhere literally from 17 to 45, literally. Because we have students coming in who have been to university, coming back to do this. So it's a
post-high school, but anything else.
But anything else, right.
That's really cool. I'm sure we'll have these questions, but I think one of the things that's very common is like we get a lot of people saying like, should I go back to school? Should I start school? Should I, you know, I don't. So you have like a pretty awesome perspective on this. Like what
I would hope
you
so.
Think?
I hate to reverse the question, but it really does depend on how best they learn, right? If you're the kind of person that sits at the computer and works and works and works and literally doesn't notice when there's a full solar eclipse and just keeps working and working and working as I've done, then you don't need school, right? You're just going to do it. And that's cool. And you'll do it for 18 hours a day. But there's a lot of people who really respect and respond to structure, right? Of being showing up for work and knowing that you're going to get critiqued and knowing that you're going to get feedback and that you have to be in class and you have to deliver on time. All of those sorts of things work really well for other people. It really depends on how you learn.
Cool. Awesome.
That's a great answer. I think. I think that sums a lot of stuff up and that there's certain people that just have a certain internal motivation. And like you said, sit in front of their computer all the time. And then there's people that it's not that they're not motivated people. They just need that kind of structure. And it's probably the same kind of difference between like really entrepreneurial people and people that just prefer having some kind of normal job.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with either, right? There's no one way to do it. It's just whatever works best for you.
That's cool. And then like the polytechnic environment, that like trade school kind of environment that seems to lend itself really well for like just learning one kind of topic or like focusing in on what you like. Right.
That it's mostly practical, but we try and do it as practical as possible. So we will simulate business. The students have to go through a practicum. They do work for nonprofits. They do a lot of practical work. At the same time, we have an art school literally across the road, literally across the train tracks, that used to be a part of SAIT. So we'll get people moving back and forth between them to doing pure art and doing this more practical design, making things work stuff.
That's cool. That's interesting. Yeah, that's cool. I think in America, at least, or like schools I know about here around in Texas is mostly lumped in with colleges, right? So it's like you have to take a PE credit to become a computer scientist, which is pretty, you know, we all use PE on a regular basis.
It's a 2-year course. Now, I do have to say that they don't just do web development, right? At the same time, my students are doing Photoshop, they're doing Illustrator, they're doing business, they're doing a whole bunch of other things. So it's, they don't do anything in total depth, but they get a really broad overview of what new media, in the big air quotes, is, which starts to be really helpful because we keep hearing all the time that designers have to understand developers have to understand designers, you have to understand this whole workflow chain. And so they come out with a really good understanding of the whole ball of wax.
That's good. It's a comprehensive thing. PE. I have to PE. A book. Pro CSS 3 animation.
Yep.
This year it came out.
Yeah, early this year, late last, but got installed.
So transitions, animations.
Transitions, animations, and working it into all kinds of stuff, right? So SVG and all kinds of fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. That's on A-Press, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes if people want to check it out. Dave, is there, do you got any hashtag hot drama for us this week, or is it light?
Do I? Man.
Sounds good.
So we don't have a whole bunch, right? It's been a pretty quiet week on the hot drama front, but good old WebKit came through this week because they have basically said, no way to SourceN because they have SourceSet, which is Doom. And yeah, so basically, we are at a stopgap because Blink and Mozilla appear to want to implement SourceN, and Mozilla has said no way to SourceSet, but WebKit is saying we are only SourceSet. So,
what is WebKit? So it's strange to kind of consider, right? Because we used to think as Chrome as WebKit, and now it's starting to get all up into our brains that that's not the case anymore. The Blink thing is really sunken in. Google is its own force unto itself now, even though they are still mostly the same. Stuff like this is pushing them apart.
Yeah, I think it's kind of these like. I think one thing that the big like divisor, and maybe we need a browser evangelist to actually tell us the truth, but was just how to access hardware APIs and stuff like that. I think that was a big thing between Blink and WebKit, because WebKit 2 is going to actually do like hardware stuff. But, you know, basically Chrome had all these upstream things or whatever, or things they were trying to push upstream, but it wasn't moving. So Chrome's like, peace out. We're making our own deal. Love you guys. Bye. So anyway, so now, but specifically with responsive images, which I just talked about at RFAC Conf, we are kind of stalled out. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. Dudley, do you have any thoughts?
It's just this mess. I don't want there to be one on high saying that this is the way it goes, but the development through consensus is always messy. It just is always messy. It's what we have to live with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's strange. It's not, I don't know. And it does that. Did you just post a link, Chris, in the chat room? It was to Wilto's kind of roundup.
Yeah. There's a couple of good links. There's the HTML5 doctor post by Bruce Lawson that kind of gives the end of year report on it, which has some kind of interesting information and background on the situation. And then, Wilto kind of summed it up in a pretty clear way of saying, this is what this company is saying. This is what this company is saying, or organization or whatever. And there's not a whole lot of overlap, unfortunately. So it does make you wish at some point that there was just kind of a dictator to all this stuff, because you really do get work done in that kind of dictatorship thing. And this is I don't know that I absolutely think
Chris
that.
Chris Boyer, bro dictator.
certainly not politically, but you know what I mean? It's things get done in dictatorships. Yeah. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Which is why I kind of like open source, but I like dictatorship open source, right? Where there's there's like a repo owner that's just rules the thing with an iron fist and loves contributions if they fit his vision or her vision of how this thing can roll out, you know? And if it's a sucky contribution, you're just like, meh, closed, you know? And how you handle that, like interpersonally, like how nice of a message you type into the box in GitHub, you know, I would err on as nice as possible, but that doesn't mean accept all pull requests because you're a nice person. I like niceness and getting stuff done can be kind of separate issues. And I found it very difficult when I was working on the, that effects library effect for a little while. It was too hard. I wanted to lead it, but I didn't feel like I deserved the Iron Fist thing yet, because it really wasn't my project from the beginning. So like, now I'm out of that. I much prefer collaboration, open source stuff, but when I have this final say.
So the BDFL, the Benevolent Dictator for Life, is that? That's an actual term.
Yeah.
I think that's honestly how everything runs. It's kind of crazy. Like, you know, Linus Torvalds for Linux, you know, and he can end up being a total jerk, which I've heard and read, but he has the like final say. He's just like, oh yeah, actually this is it. And Node has switched over their BDFL. I think it was Ryan Dahl at the beginning, but maybe it's Isaac's now. Isaac, what's his Smith? So anyway, interesting.
I think Firefox and Chrome have the biggest fists here. So I would suggest that if I had my vote, I would say get source end going and then just kind of try to strong arm the other ones into doing it. And if they don't, I guess that sucks, but maybe there can be a polyfill or something, but there needs to be some kind of progress and some bruised egos or something to get this forward, because it's a mess right now. So, and it's hard for a reason, because it really is hard.
I think we should bruise everyone's ego and just use the gosh darn picture element.
I'm a fan of the picture element. I liked it.
Yeah,
me too. I like it, but apparently it was like we learned our lesson with the video element that sucked, so we're not gonna go down that sucky path again. You're like, really? Because that exists and it's working, so and like, what's so sucky about it? Are you gonna deprecate it? No. So why not keep going down an existing road, even if it's not?
Yeah.
And why is it not great? It's not great for you, but it's great for us. Right. Like, who's not great in this scenario? You know, like, oh, is it hard to program? Oh.
I've managed to replicate it with using JavaScript. Is it super difficult? I don't know. Yeah.
Speaking of, we have the CSS off is going on, which is this thing where you get a Photoshop document and you open it and look at it in Photoshop and take apart the layers and export stuff and figure out how you can get it going in HTML and CSS. It's a contest. You know, you can win a MacBook Air if you win and your stuff gets rated. I'm one of the judges. We look all through your work. This year you're submitting it through CodePen, which is cool. So it's a little bit of cross promo between CodePen and Unmatched Style and stuff. It's free to enter. It's free. You get a CodePen Pro account for free for the time that you're doing it. As you're listening to this, you'll still have another week to do it, even if you on the podcast, it's going to come out on like Tuesday probably, and you'll still have through that end of that week to work on it. It's fun. And you know what? If you're like, oh, I can't believe it's in Photoshop, like, oh, who provides assets like that anymore? There's plenty of like, not hate, but like, there is a little hate actually, and a little, that's why we're doing this in the hot drama section, and a little bit of like disappointment and stuff, and feel like we're ruining the industry, you know, like you kind of know what Dan Cederholm must feel like, man. Every other day there's something that's like, Dribbble makes my car slow, you know, or some kind of thing that is like awful.
It's true. True facts.
You know, anyway, you don't like it, don't join it. It's just a fun little contest. So I thought we'd do a little promotion on it, because it literally is fun, I probably will do it. I've done it every single year. One year, the reason I didn't know about it is I was the very first year that it happened. I was the very first submission, which I should have waited a little longer because you're not graded on speed.
No.
I ended up not winning, but I got pretty high up. So
I'll be entering this year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
But Dan Moore is always going to be in my head referred to now as that son of a smurf, Dan Moore, because I'm looking at this thing. I showed it to my students the other day because I give them similar work, right? Similar ideas of, okay, here's a goal. You've got to create it. And I know that they sweat this stuff. And I'm looking at this thing going, what? It's terrible.
Oh, it's going to be tough.
I downloaded it and I looked at it and I was like, yeah, no. I mean, it's cool, but I was just like, I would spend way too much time on it. Cause you know, it's just like, it's got everything you want. You're like, how am I going to code that? How am I going to code that?
I looked at all the things. I didn't see anything that would be impossible.
No, it's not impossible. It's just work. And making it responsive and back to IE8. And that's a challenge.
No, it's IE10. IE10.
Was it IE10? I thought it was only IE8. Yeah. I thought they said back to IE8.
No, they actually, it was 9 last year, and then they made it 10 this year. So it's moving
forward. Oh, okay. Cool. Well, that's easy.
Speaking of last year, you guys, Paravel did the PSD last year.
Oh, yeah. We had fun time. We made a Double Dare themed website. Awesome. People killed it, dude. That was the most, because like when you deliver a PSD, this is what's cool is when you deliver a PSD, you have there's no like animations or anything inside a PSD, right? So people have to infer or add those and express that. And man, it was so awesome.
Yeah.
It was just so cool to see like how people kind of invented different things.
Yeah, that's it. The Photoshop document is a snapshot at a certain size at a certain time, right? It's a beginning point. It's not that it has to remain this way, especially now, right? Yeah, it's going to be fun, but I'm going to lose a weekend to it. I just know I am.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that kind of wraps it up for news and drama a little bit.
Yeah.
Just today I published a new course, just for my own ching version of this. I released a new course on CSS Tricks. It's called Learning jQuery from Scratch. And if you're a Lodge member, you get access to that course as well as the other courses I've done in the past. And and it kind of has some people actually use the Lodge to teach, which is, I guess, an angle for this show. Like they sign up for it, but then they use the videos in class or they, as supplementary material, make their kids watch them or whatever, which is totally fine and cool with me. And then there's CodePen Pro, which also has a bit of a teaching angle to it because you get this thing called Professor Mode, which you can you could bring up a URL, give your students that URL, and they can kind of watch on their screen as you type. And then there's a little chat room. They can talk back and forth and stuff. So it's kind of has a teaching angle. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll combine those things. And I'm saying now, if you go CodePen Super Pro, you just get complimentary access to the lot. Ooh, excuse me, as a bit of a cross promo thing. So there's a little ad for myself. Let's move into the
awesome.
The Q&A.
Totally.
Oh, and I am using CodePen in the classroom now. Not sure if you know that, Chris.
Really? In what context?
In my classes.
I mean, how do you
it's trial run so far, right? But I'll give here's a starting document, right? And here's what I'm doing. And okay, now I'm going to stop and you go off and do your own thing, right? And if you get lost, then you can always resync with me, right?
Oh, sure.
That's cool. Huh. That makes sense. I mean, it is like something you need to know, like getting a code environment up and going. But man, like CodePen is mostly that. It's HTML, CSS, JavaScript, very clear lines.
I'll use it for the very, very beginning classes, obviously. But once they start getting the idea of, yeah, it's just code, and here's my JavaScript, and here's my CSS, here's my HTML, yeah, just let them go for it.
Yeah, there is kind of that. While you're in professor mode, there's a little button that a student can't edit what you're doing when you're in professor mode. That's just the nature of professor mode.
Right.
But they get a little button that says stop and play. Right. And if they click that, then it stops syncing with the professor and just lets them do whatever they want. So they can type and edit and play with stuff. Sure. And if they hit fork at that point, they can have a copy of their work that they saved out.
Right.
And then they can go back to that room and hit catch up with professor or whatever. I can't even remember what the exact it says. I think it just says catch up with class or something.
Yeah.
And then it'll like wipe out their work and catch them back up with the professor. I think that's what Dudley is referring to.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what I'm doing. It's again, trial runs, but it's looking really, really good. And your guys are just awesome. I mean, I made a suggestion of a giant point type so I can put it on a projector in like 12 hours or so. They've got it done. Your dev guys are just awesome.
Well, That one was pretty easy. I did that one.
You but, did? Thank you. No,
it didn't. It actually has spawned into some bigger ideas for us because I've seen at this point several people use it at conferences to present stuff. And it usually there's like something cringeworthy for me, right? Like the projector's resolution is just a little too small. And I'm like, or I wish they could bump up the font size easier and they don't even know that they can really.
Right.
So I was thinking about making a, you know, I don't know why I would say this on the radio, but I guess I'm going to probably work on making a feature that's just for using it at conferences, right? It gets rid of the header because you don't even need to see that to get more real estate. And it gives you controls to bump up that font size bigger and smaller or swap between a light on dark and dark on light theme, depending on what's better for the projector that you can like make that decision like in real time. You know, you don't have to like go to your settings and change it. You can just. Anyway, that's just a little idea I have for us. I'm kind of hoping that people use it more and more for conferences.
It's awesome.
Marketing.
All right. Let's get into the meat
let's do
of
that.
The ShapTalk show. Frederick Futura, baddest last name in the whole wide world, writes in, I decided to get back into web dev after about 12 years away. Despite having access to many online schools and tutorials, I enrolled in an intensive campus course as I still believed in the classroom setting. During this course, and to my surprise, we spent quite a number of weeks, 4 to 5-ish, on Flash. We questioned and challenged the professor about its need in 2013. He argued in its favor in his own way. Since we weren't there to develop games or anything, would you consider it responsible to even try to teach Flash in 2013?
Ooh.
Dudley?
Yeah, that's pretty much
the teacher.
Yeah, I don't do Flash. We have another girl. We do use it, okay? I don't teach it, but we do use it. And we use it in a different way. And again, I can't speak to, obviously, that teacher. But we use it for mostly doing two things. Introducing the idea of scripting and animation, because it's really good at that. Okay, it's really easy to do an action script. It's really easy to do keyframe animation. Okay, so it's a good way of introducing those concepts. We also use it for app development. So if they're going to do a mobile app, it's a nice and easy way to get out an Android app, for example. So we do use it for that. Would I expect it in an intensive web development class? Probably not. But again, I'm doing a 2-year course, right? There's enough room for that. In a 6-week class, I wouldn't suggest quite so much.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that like Android thing. I think when this question came in, I was like, lol, 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 that teacher's dumb. Whatever. You know, I was just like, get GTFO, please. You know, but I was talking to some guys from Funny Garbage. They're like a New York agency. They do kind of apps and development and stuff like that. And they were saying, you know, the like transpilers from Flash to app or whatever, like Adobe Air apps can like go to Android or even iOS like super easily. So that's my ignorance about that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are like transpilers that go into these platforms. So if you're heavy on app development and you like animations, like you were saying, Dudley, mm-hmm. it does sound like it could be useful. But I mean, if you took a course called web design and they taught you Flash, I would.
And your students were arguing with you about it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the time. I mean,
I'd love to hear, Frederick, what were the arguments in favor? I mean, sure, it's not like he's evil. I'm sure he just has some opinions about what it's all about and stuff. But surely you could be like, okay, everybody take out your phone. Okay, it doesn't work on those. You know, like,
yeah. Does anyone here
I guess that's not true, right? Because Android
a netbook or MacBook Air. Okay, well, you can't do it either.
I will. Can I talk a little bit about broader web dev courses in general in classes?
Yeah, I guess.
Sure. Let's do the second part of this question. What with online instruction mushrooming, is there? This is the second part of Frederick's question. Is there room for classroom setting in web dev learning? Is that where you're going to go? Anyway?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. And I'd argue yes. And it kind of goes back to my original point that there's certain things that you don't get out of online classes. Online classes start to assume that A, you have the discipline to show to do the work, right? And there's no real consequence to not. Okay? If you pay $200 for an online course and it doesn't work out, it's no big deal, right? If you pay $2,000 to $20,000 for a full-time course, you're going to be really dedicated to that. You've invested in it. So there's a certain degree of, and again, they'll happily take your money to do the next course, right, online. They'll just be yada, 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 keep going.
Maybe you should have to mail me a tow to take my course, you know?
Okay, go that far. But well, there's consequences, right? There's if you don't pass my class, you don't get into the next class. But you have to do the work. So, yeah, but traditional classroom web development has this bad reputation, and to a certain degree, it deserves it because there are a lot of people out there teaching old stuff. You've got to do a bit of research. They're not all bad, obviously, but you have to do the research. There's, for reasons I can get into separately, there's not quite the same pressure to be totally up to date in traditional academia as there is online courses. And that's unfortunate, and academia works against that to a degree. So you got to do some research, and again, we can talk about that later.
Yeah, that sounds really good. It's yet another important point that we sometimes miss when we talk about this stuff. I feel like is the dedication that you get from signing up for a class like that is.
Yeah, and you're working at it. It becomes a full time job, pretty much working at it.
Right. Should Chad L writes in. And I guess this is the same question. So if we kind of breeze over it, that's okay. I wanted to ask you guys about your thoughts on getting a degree from a university. Is that something you feel is necessary for our line of work? Or is there value enough in self-teaching the skills in web development? And I guess what I would change that to is that the place that you work, do they have traditional degrees or is it, so the question is slightly different. Can you go to like a portfolio school or a trade school or whatever? Is that just as valuable as somewhere that gives you that kind of official degree thing?
Yeah, to me. At the end of the day, I tell my students, no one's actually going to be looking at grades. They're going to be looking at your portfolio. How you get to that portfolio and the way in which you make that portfolio is whatever works best for you. If it works best for you to take a 2-year intensive or a 6-week intensive or whatever it happens to be, and that gets you there, that's what counts. The only places that start, to my mind, that look for a degree are kind of hidebound, more traditional places where it's everyone's judged upon their academic credentials. But in web development, I don't see that. Not terribly much, at least.
Yeah. I would grade you on how well crafted your emails are. And I'm not even kidding, you know, like when I get an email that's like a joke, you know, or I can barely understand what they're saying and there's no context and everything. When you get emails from somebody that are just, they're clear spoken and, but yet casual and communicated the idea clearly, I'm like, wow, oh, I love you.
I will hire you.
There's a really good question recently from a CodePen guy who was asking for, he's a graduate from a course and he's been called back to contribute to their recreation of their curriculum because they've realized they're out of date and everything else. So he's got a little CodePen that's asking for questions and feedback and everything else. I'll put the link in the chat room in a second. And
Yeah, and was that Keith Weiland, I think.
Yeah, that's the guy, yeah. And one of the things I said was, okay, soft skills are really important. You've got to make sure that you're getting just communication skills, because that's quite honestly some of the biggest problems I find. You've got to be able to write an email without spelling errors in it and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be cool to like card sort those skills, like ability to write an email, ability to code a web page, and see which one shows up on top.
Yeah.
If everyone were to sort it. The only thing I wanted to add to this discussion is recently I was listening to another podcast. So this is a cross promotion, called Freakonomics. It's the book, and they have a, two-part podcast. It just happened like last week or whatever, called Freakonomics Goes to College. And it talks about the value of college and stuff like that. It's pretty interesting. You know, like why you'd want to go to college, and the arguments, you know, are the arguments for college are typically from educators, and people who have gone to college. But at the same time, it's very interesting. Like if you graduate from college, you're expected to make like 8% more per year per, you know, as you go throughout your life. So maybe it's like a, you know, very expensive investment up front, right. But then like you get that back over time.
It's a compound interest investment in your life is what it is. Right. You make that investment up front. You might not see the immediate return, but over time it's definitely going to accrue.
But I think what's interesting about our industry is it is so changing there. You know, it's very different. But they just kind of make the point, like you go to college and you think you're going to do one thing, but then you're exposed to whatever Japanese, like I was, and you become a Japanese major. And maybe that set me on the wrong path, but it was very fun. And I lived in Japan. So,
and you can still skoshi hanashimasu. So that's good.
So desu ne. All right. Chris, did you have anything else to add?
I love it though. I want to do a sponsor.
Over.
If I could. Yeah, indeed. We're going to do the lynda.com one first. That's lynda.com. And if you just add /shop to that, for one, they'll know you're coming from here, which we greatly appreciate. And two, if you sign up through that URL, you get a week for free. So get in there and listen to some stuff. And so they're video training courses, right? So they're kind of just what we're talking about on this show, and what's the difference between can you go to lynda.com and get just as good of a thing from a university or not? Well, we've already talked about it. It kind of depends on your personality, but they don't have to be mutually exclusive either, is a good point. And that certainly you could already be enrolled in university and be benefiting from lynda.com, certainly, especially because, you know, have already spent $2,000 or $20,000, as we said, at college. And this is $25 a month to get you into Lynda. So I'm pretty sure you could probably tack that on to your bill and not have it affect too much. Anyway, there's over 2 million active members of lynda.com, 2,000 courses. There's courses being added every single day. Let's just look at some of the new courses on Lynda. jQuery UI widgets. So if you're into jQuery UI and want to look at widgets, probably has some stuff about the widget factory in there and stuff, a whole new course on that. The new features in GarageBand for Mac. So all those Apple apps for Mavericks were upgraded with all kinds of new UI and in some cases stripping of features, I guess, where there's a new course on GarageBand for that. And then there's a new course on OS X Mavericks and all the new stuff that's in Mavericks. XML integration with Java. If you want to dig into some deep nerd stuff. I mean, those are like this week they came out.
Oh, my. You
know, Photoshop for fashion design. This is crazy, you know?
Like, there you go.
It's not crazy. It's just like that's just what you get. You just deep dive stuff on Lynda. So check it out. Let's do another question here.
What's that? I was going to say, $25 a month. So I was going to make a ramen joke because you were in college, and I was like, that's like $250 of ramen. That's a lot of ramen.
I know, but, and then it kind of backfired.
Yeah, so it backfired. But then I changed it, and it was like for like 5 cups of coffee, you have access to like anything you want to learn. It's pretty awesome. So check it. 7-day trial, lynda.com/shop. Tim Rourke writes in, Jim Rourke rhymes with pork. Thank you, pronunciation field. All right. I think it would be amazing if you were to do a whole show on a beginner syllabus, just a conversation describing a general overview of the things someone new to the field should study right away to build their core coding skills. Well, Tim, we're not going to do a whole show, but we're going to talk as long as we can.
Yeah, this was a big, long question about Tim, and he had all kinds of extra stuff. I just kind of trimmed it down to this about, like, you know, what are the technologies you should focus on? Is there a list of books that we could recommend? Is there, you know, like, if you're going to pick a CMS, which one would that be? You know, it's like you're just getting started in this field, which is, it's like a good time and a really weird time to get involved in this stuff right now, because it can be so overwhelming, the amount of different topics people are talking about. What do we say to beginners? What is, like Dudley, what is like the first day of your class, right? Or what does the syllabus look like for your first class?
I compare first semester in class to like the opening scene in Saving Private Ryan, and you're in a boat and you're jumping around and it's queasy and it's sick and you jump on the beach and it's hell. And then you run and you run and you run and you keep running. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of commitment. But if I can do a quick little self plug, I've started to do a reading list for my students and for everybody else on my blog, demosthenes.info, demosthenes.info. And it basically breaks it down. So it goes through, okay, we're going to talk about HTML tags. So here's some stuff off CSS Tricks. Here's some resources that I have. Here's some book chapters to read. Here's some X and Y. And it just breaks it down.
So HTML would be a good place to start if you're starting on day
yeah.
one.
I'm sorry. So, yeah, HTML, obviously, yeah. And I literally start people off really, really basic and then grow it up from there fairly quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds good. Yeah. I like the idea of, I think HTML is the clear place to start, right? Because nothing works without that. I mean, to the highest level echelons of the nerdy stuff that we do and talk about, HTML is always involved. So, we certainly have to learn that. And I would probably, I mean, I guess if it was me, I'd probably try to move into something that ends up try to get it. Cause you know, when you just show an H1 on a page,
yeah.
It's like in that Times New Roman and stuff, you're like, yeah. Okay, cool. I get it conceptually, but this doesn't look like any website I've ever been to in my life. Right. So if you can try to get it looking closer to what a real website looks like as soon as possible so that they make that mental connection between what they're doing and what real websites are. That would be pretty cool, I think.
And the other major challenge I'm having is trying to divorce people from tools and trying to get them into technology instead, because there's a very real seductive nature to believing that X tool will do the job for you, whatever tool that happens to be. But if you could understand the underlying technology, the tool doesn't matter, right? So I'll literally start people off in the text editor and then move over to something else and then move over to something else, because it helps people understand, hey, we're just writing HTML. We're just doing CSS. Now, are there more efficient ways of doing CSS? Yeah, so I'll introduce preprocessors. I'll introduce X and Y. But to start from the basics is really, really important.
I love it. Hopefully that's good for you, Tim Rourke. I should do another sponsor quick, because we actually, time got away from us a little bit here.
I started late because of my dog and the, trash guys.
And then somebody came to my house and Digby was totally silent. How does that work?
No, I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Real quick, I was Googling around for like web design courses or something. I came up on this one, design for Lean Six Sigma. So apparently there's a lean whatever startup version of Six Sigma, if you're interested in that.
That sounds
sort of
like
thing.
Like a sorority.
It sounds like a curse. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead. Enjoy.
The URL for this conference is 2014.incontrolconference.com. I've been to a ton of different In Controls, right? They do it every year. It's this year, it's February 17th through 19th in Orlando, Florida, which will be beautifully warm that time of year, despite being in the middle of the winter for us Northern Hemisphere folks. It's at a beautiful hotel that's got, if you're staying at the hotel, which you should because it's the same hotel and venue kind of place, they have like free food and drinks in the afternoon. after the conference, gets out after it, which is pretty cool, every single day. It's, you know, it's got one of those glass elevators where you like can look at the inside of the hotel as you descend to the conference. It's pretty sweet. I think they're announcing a new speaker every day this week. I think that's how that's going on. One of which is Dave Rupert. So you might want to check that out. Estelle Weil is going to be here. She's been on the show. Clarissa Peterson did a talk I really liked at CSS DevConf. She's going to be there. Val Head's going to be there. She's been on the show. Brad Frost has been on the show. Christopher Schmidt's been on the show. Lots of people that you'll recognize from this show. There's a keynote address that's not even announced yet. So I don't even know who that is. They're our sponsor. I even know Christopher personally. I have no idea what it's going to be. I'm sure it's going to be amazing. That's why they're making it a big hoopla kind of thing. Check it out. It's going to be sweet. It's going to be a good vacation. Take the family. Go to Disney World. Learn about the web. You'll love it.
Yep. It's good. It's one. It's a really nice conference. You get to hang out in a hotel room with people. It's fun. You solve the world's problems from a hotel room. At least we did. All right. Next question comes from Drew Wyatt. I can't help but walk away from some jobs feeling dirty. I worked for a small web design company as a PHP developer a little over a year ago before taking an internal development job that I couldn't turn down. When I worked for a web company, I worked under a few senior devs that helped push me in the right direction and taught me most of what I know. Now that I work completely alone, I never know if I'm doing things the right way. Stack Overflow and books can only teach me so much. What are your recommendations for overcoming both at work and when I freelance?
I think, Chris, you had a similar question last week of someone who was saying that they were a ninja, but they weren't really... They didn't feel comfortable.
That is similar, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like when they're alone, you feel like maybe you're not doing things the best way. You don't have the checks and balances of a team being there. And then sometime when you're on a team, you feel like you're invincible and that your team is full of geniuses and you're setting this pace of the world's development metrics.
But it also becomes,
so that's weird.
It also becomes a little bit of Stockholm syndrome, right? Of you're just doing it the way that you do it because you're a team and that's the way you do it. And by yourself, you have all these doubts and questions.
Right. It is probably mostly doubt, Drew. It sounds like, you know, you listen to Shop Talk Show, so you're a leg up anyway. But I know what you mean. I mean, how do you validate that you're still doing things the right way? I mean, I guess it does your... You know, you could, for example, and I've heard this as feedback, you know, watch me do stuff on the lodge and then people are like, wow, I didn't learn a ton of new stuff. I mean, but more importantly, I validated that the way that I do stuff is very similar to the way that you do stuff. So that was worth it to them just to know that their workflow kind of matches up with somebody else's, which is cool. So you could do that. You could watch tutorials and stuff that are specifically about, they're not about like maybe learning one specific thing, but they're more general. Like, here's how I go about things, kind of seek out that kind of learning material and see if your way of doing things kind of syncs up. And then, you know, like if a book was published last month, it's probably fairly up to date right now. Check that out. Is that similar to what you're doing? I mean, I feel like there's some bars that you can measure yourself against here that, you know, it's not like you're completely in a hole.
And I would also say it's a good habit to check your fundamental assumptions about what you're doing and how you're working. You know, if you're using jQuery just for selecting, right, primarily for get elements in the DOM, well, hey, there's other ways you could do that. You can step back and start to look at, hey, I've been using jQuery all this time, but maybe there's a better way, the more fundamental way to get that done. And I think that if you do that regularly, you'll be okay. If you just keep doing what you keep doing, then, yeah, you're going to get yourself stymied and jammed and eventually out of date.
So look at your dependencies, I guess, is would be a good way to put that, because you know, at some point there aren't any more down the chain. So, but you know, I don't know, view source and see what's all in there, and is there some magic in there that you don't understand?
Right.
Then that might be a good next target for you to understand.
I wonder if you could, if you know, it's tough because he's working. If he's doing PHP, he's probably doing like backend sort of stuff he can't, like samples he can't really share online, right? But I wonder if there would be a way to like do a code review or get some sort of external service to code review or something like that. Maybe something like that exists, or maybe people offer that or something as like consulting, you know?
Or just pair programming with somebody else.
I like that idea.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, like how, I mean, maybe there is a thing like hire a buddy or something and you just screen share.
I really like that idea. I've met some resistance to it at some point, whereas, you know, kind of going to a company, they wanted me to come out and do a workshop kind of thing. And I was like, hey, that's kind of cool. I guess I could do that. I don't like love workshops, but I could try to put one together. But wouldn't it be more a better use of our time if I could just like look over your shoulder, look through your code, see how you guys work on things, and then kind of like make some suggestions or point out things that I see that could be better, that can, like in on your actual website. And they were just like super duper uninterested in that.
Yeah.
They just wanted to like sit in a room and eat some pizza and watch a slideshow, you know, which is fine. Yeah. I like that too, but anyway.
Yeah. I guess maybe there's like a, yeah, I wonder if he probably doesn't control budget. Like Drew probably isn't like drafting budgets, but I wonder if you could just whatever scope out a few, you know, few hundred dollars or something to just to get a couple hours a month or something of code review. I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just
it's tough because the best people at it. This is one of these classic scenarios where the people that you really
Rebecca
want to help.
Murphy,
yeah,
conundrum.
Just can't. She can't help you. Yeah, actually, didn't she talk about that at one point about how like publications really need good code review, but the people that are qualified to do it really just don't have time for that type of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the people who are super good at JavaScript are super busy writing JavaScript. So they don't have the free time to like hang out and check out code, you know? Huh.
But,
anyway,
you know, I'm sure there's a teaching conundrum too, but but Dudley hasn't fallen victim to it. Right. Do you find that you can be a developer who's good and current and up to date and just chooses teaching as a career? I mean, you must, right?
I think you can, but it requires a bit of dedication, and you have to love teaching. You have to really, really love teaching. And it's difficult, right? Because there's always this tension of, well, do I go out in the industry? Do I come back? But it's a really good indication, I like to think, that you've got a good teacher. If you can honestly look at the teacher and say, yeah, that guy could go out tomorrow and land a job, that's who you want to be learning from, right? You don't want to be learning from somebody who learned this stuff 10 years ago and just keeps reteaching what he learned 10 years ago.
Sure. Which might be a benefit of the kind of the portfolio school thing where they can, I don't know, they charge a little more, but they have like industry professionals come in and do stuff. Or maybe that's a sign of a good teacher too, right? There's the teacher's there and they know stuff, but they're bringing in people that are doing it for real. And yeah. Yeah, it's because it's presumably, you know, there's money to be made in this industry, and you know, it's not like you make nothing teaching. I'm sure you do fine, but like, you probably aren't getting rich teaching, which is kind of a bummer, and it's probably what drives some people away from it.
Right.
Sadly.
I was going to say one last thing. In Austin here, we have this thing called Cafe Bedouins, and I'm sure it exists or whatever, but it's basically just a hack night. People show up at a coffee shop and hack, and, you know, people from all over Ruby. It's a lot of Ruby guys, but people from all over kind of just get together and work on dumb side projects or whatever. There's a lot of times I'm asked usually asked CSS or design questions or whatever, but that might be, maybe you could start something in your town or your community or whatever. It's not exactly a meetup. It is a meetup, but it's really just hanging out and coding. And you're just saying like every Tuesday we're coding at night and bring your laptop, and you know, that way you can kind of passively or whatever, you're talking to your friends about code review and what I should do here or whatever, and you're picking stuff up, you know. There you go. That's what I was gonna say. Next question.
I like it.
Is an audio question. Our favorite kind of question here on the Shop Talk Show. Let's see if we can play just one audio question.
Hi. I've been learning to code for just about a year now, so I'm not having to unlearn some of the old ways. and I'm just about to start doing some real-life projects with some real-life people. So my question is, as someone who's just starting out in the industry, should I be using Flexbox for my live projects right now? Thank you very much, and thanks for doing such a great show. Cheers, guys.
Like Dudley can take this with having
Flexbox
a
Flexbox or not to Flexbox? Dudley?
That's, it depends upon the client. It depends upon the users. It depends upon where you want to go. I love Flexbox. I just posted an article on it this morning. It's magic. It's beautiful. And it solves a lot of design problems that people have of how the hell do you make this happen on a web page. But ultimately, it's not up to you. It's up to the client. It's up to the users. It's up to who you're trying to work for.
So yeah. If you just, you know, just look at support levels, here's the scoop. There's a bunch of different versions of Flexbox. There's an old school version, there's a tweener version, there's a new school version. Even going as far back as the oldest version of it, you're still looking at IE10 minimum. So if you absolutely need an IE9 and you don't want to do like super crazy layout, because unfortunately Flexbox is, you know what I mean? Flexbox is a layout thing. It's not one of those things that it can just not work and that's okay, like border radius or whatever. It kind of has to work. And the fallbacks for it usually aren't as simple as float or something. No. Sometimes there's some display table stuff you can do, but it's mind-bendy enough to not worry about that pretty much I'm like, I've rarely ever seen a production Flexbox thing with a decent fallback that's fine.
Yeah.
So basically you're looking at if you can pull off IE10 only, you're probably in good shape. And yes, you could you could do it in a production project. I guess the other, you know, do you need Opera Mini? If you absolutely do, too bad. You can't use it then. But pretty much everything else is looking good. You know, Android support, iOS support, mm-hmm. all the rest of the major browser support of some kind or another. And actually, mostly these days, the new syntax. So it's super duper duper close. I think the worst one is the IE10 plus. That's the hardest one.
Yeah. And I would make the suggestion, if he's not already, of using the final syntax first and then working backwards from that. And so you get a really recent browser, use the final syntax, and it's all cool, and then try to work backwards through Firefox and then work backwards through Safari, unless you're using
really?
Mixin or something. Oh, yeah. Because okay. Unless, again, you're using Mixins or SAS or something like that, in which case it's taken care of. But, because I've tried to do them all at once. Does that make sense? Of trying to get, okay, I'm going to do all the Firefox and Safari backwards stuff at the same time, and it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, I can't. I don't have much to. That's interesting. I don't have much to say about it. It's kind of the opposite as you would expect, maybe, in that you should like start with the old stuff and work forward, maybe. But I don't know. I haven't worked with it enough on a live project to know which the best, better approach is, and I will take your word for it on that one. Cool. So do we have time for one more, Dave, or should we,
yeah,
a quick one?
If Dudley's got
absolutely
time, we got time.
Yeah, sure.
Perfect. Mark Zemanski writes in, I've been designing and developing for a couple of years and just moved to WordPress recently. I recently stumbled upon the editor that allows you to edit the templates in CSS. And I wonder if it's a good idea to do edits here, or continue to edit the files from PHP or from FTP. Okay, so just got into WordPress, clicked templates in the sidebar, found out you can hot edit templates then there, or should he be using FTP? Dudley?
Templates? Yeah, sure. Why not? What's the worst he can do?
I think for me, it's you can accidentally select all and delete everything.
True.
In the web browser, at least, pretty easily.
So there, you know, if you go to the WordPress admin, WP admin, and then you go under, I don't know, whatever it is. I could look right now. I might as well. But there's some kind of thing along the left navigation there to get you into like an editor mode. There's literally like a built-in syntax highlighting and all that type of stuff. Appearance, customize, I think, or editor, appearance editor. And yeah, you could go in there and screw up your active theme literally if you wanted to, but it is kind of convenient for really quick changes, right? Because presumably it already has write access to this file, and you could just go fix a little problem and save it. You did that all through a web browser. You didn't even have to bust out your editor. It's kind of neat. Little dangerous, possibly. There's no version control for it. There's no backing up from it. I mean, right. All that normal stuff that we kind of complain about that is a bad idea is present here. It's just, but the comparing this to just straight up doing it through FTP, well, then there is no difference because of the same downfalls of FTP this way too. So if you're already not version controlling it and you're super commando style and you don't mind this, you could. You also don't have all the comforts of home of your normal text editor though. You don't have auto completion, or you don't have, you know, a really nice find command. You know, all this stuff is like buried in a web page, so you get what the web page has for you. You know, have the same keyboard shortcuts you're used to, and like Command/ for commenting out a line and stuff. You don't have the comforts of home of a code editor, and these things are getting a lot better. You know, we work on CodePen a lot on trying to bring the comforts of a code editor to the browser the best we can through CodeMirror and customizations. But yeah, you're not going to get that either. So I would say at best use it for little quick fixes, but it would not be probably a very comfortable place to just be a developer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get the tools, right? You don't get the syntax check or autocomplete and all that in the.
Yeah. I wouldn't try to develop the whole theme in it. No, but.
Yeah. That, I mean, it is designed for like little hot fixes, yeah. You know, but I think in general, like Mark, just the idea, that's a great place to start, but ideally you want to get to a place where you're versioning, like using Git or something to back up your files to version control that. And then you can deploy through FTP. That's just fine. But, I would do it everything locally and send it up. Cause you know, there's dumb stuff. Like if you're working at a coffee shop and then it just doesn't save or something like that, or doesn't upload, or you want the backup, and I've experienced. So. Yeah.
Sounds fair.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you have time for one more?
Absolutely.
We got a little bit of a late start because, like I said, trash guys and dogs and stuff. So, Chris, you want to do the next one?
Yeah, absolutely. Name a name for me. I forget
Sue
where
Lee.
We are.
Sue Lee
says, I don't do any coding. I focus solely on web design, which, okay. Can I use a robust, well-maintained Behance or Dribbble profile instead of building a separate portfolio site? Will potential employers look down on me if I decide to go in that direction? The reason I stumbled on the word web design is I feel like that should be defined as somebody who does do some front-end coding, and that there might be a better word for you if you're like maybe just a visual designer. You know, like you don't really do web design because you don't do the web design part. You know, you use Photoshop. So maybe you're a Photoshop designer or whatever tool you use. You're a visual designer, and that you don't do any code at all. That's more what you are. And that putting the web in front of it is presumes that you do some of the web part too, you know? Anyway, if you are that though, you are just a visual designer. Why not? What about just Behance or Dribbble or whatever? Like, if we were hiring a person with that skill set, would that be okay?
Sure. Again, it's as long as you make it clear that you're designing this stuff and you have, well, you don't have to say I have no idea how this would be pulled off, but that's the downside of not knowing code, right? Again, that whole idea of ideally, yeah, designers know a little code, and coders know a little bit of that bad design. That, but as long as you make that proviso, that's cool.
Yep, I agree. And you know what? You might actually be better off. I know that's maybe a little weird to say, but like the time maintaining your own site, if you're not a coder or don't have any desire to do that, is probably going to feel like frustrating and like weird and maybe not a good use of your time. And maybe that you should, I mean, not to say that you shouldn't get into this, because I actually think that you should probably, but if you're just in that mode where you need to get your portfolio going and stuff, to stumble through making a website and then have that end result kind of be crappy, you might be better off not doing that and just sticking to a Dribbble profile or whatever. And I can also tell you that in the few times that I've hired some designers, I literally just went to Dribbble and found them.
Yeah.
So like the chances of me finding your own website out there on the worldwide internet is a lot lower than if I look around and see some work that I like on Dribbble. Cause I'm just, I want to pick one place where I know I'm going to be able to look at a lot of different options and find that person. So even if you do make your own website, I would maintain a presence on Dribbble if you can.
Yeah, like Photoshop and all that, that makes it really easy to like publish straight to Behance, because I think
Adobe owns
Behance now or something like that. So it can, I think their whole goal is to, yeah, be this like portfolio for you. But I, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I think it's fine or whatever. I think I come down to like expression, right? Like, this is your thing. Like, you want to express yourself. Like, does a Behance or a Dribbble profile express you? You know, not, maybe not perfectly. Maybe you want just a URL that pulls in a feed of Dribbble shots or Behance shots or something like that, just to give yourself a little bit more, like, that's your expression. That's your business card, if you will. You know, like, you don't, yeah, I mean, That's where I come at it from, is you probably want to like show who you are through your portfolio or through your website. You don't want to just like just show your pictures that you made. That, does that make sense? Are you guys okay?
And it comes down to, where do you want to invest your time? Do you want to invest your time in making more design, or do you want to invest your time in trying to learn new stuff and presenting it in a very particular way? Where do you want to go? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and yeah, I think learning code is smart, but
I don't disagree. But
I think it's smart for anyone. Like,
I love this like conversation, actually, because it's that classic, like, if you just learn a little bit of code, though, you know, you're not really going to be the world's next greatest ever front end developer. Does it still make you better? Or do you, or is the, because the reason that people tell you about it, they're like, well, then you'll like start to understand the limitations a little bit more. And so you'll get started in it and you'll make some boxes and stuff and you'll realize how hard layout is and all that stuff. And then you open up Photoshop again, now with this like a limited amount of knowledge of knowing how hard all this stuff is. Does it actually make you a worse designer? And that you're like, ugh, I better not design something that's too hard. You know, or what?
Chris, are you saying that code is a gateway drug?
Maybe. I always found that interesting, that like the more you know, that like learning a little bit about code can actually make you a worse designer. Like that's kind of a bummer. And I don't think anybody truly believes that, but it's like, it's there. It's nagging at people's minds.
But yeah, but for me, so here's jerk face Dave Rupert talking. You know, when I go to like Dribbble and I see like this guy like made this UI player or whatever, and there's like no code, it, to me, it's just a picture. Like it has fulfilled zero requirements to function as a web player. You know, it's just a picture. So that's, you know, that I kind of like am just like, well, it'd be really cool if you coded, so you could start like stubbing that out or show that working in the browser more so than just a picture, because that's all it is to me right now. But that's maybe me, unique to me, and how I like nothing. Design is just dead to me, literally, until it's in the browser. Then it feels alive to me. So it's squishy. It moves. It does all kinds of weird things. It can only do squares, that sort of stuff.
Speaking of how complex this world is and getting started learning this thing, I just think this is funny. I feel like I should do a post on this, but some people on Twitter last night, and Tim Holman was one of them who's in the chat room now, like somebody made a blue box on CodePen and it just spawned this like incredible.
Oh yeah.
Incredible. Like everybody and their brothers like making a different version of how you can make a blue box on a screen. And it's like SVG and WebG and, you know, pseudo elements and a bookmarklet and a jQuery plugin, and there's like 30 different ways to make a blue box on a screen. And A, it's kind of hilarious, and B, it's kind of like, well, no wonder this world is so hard. You know, it actually has some like meaning, like all good of these weird memes. Anyway,
blue box. Yeah. Well, so back to that question about code review or getting, you know, help. Somebody in the chat room pointed out that springloops.io, which is kind of like a version control kind of thing, they have a code review product. So, yeah. So it's like a, you can deploy to stuff, but I don't, you know, I think if you didn't hook up the deployment, like you could maybe get some code review kind of thing going on. So
I've heard of some other of those.
Yeah. I don't know. And I don't know if you can hire somebody to look at stuff, but you know, that might be an option, you know, something. Think about it. Okay. I think we are done. Dudley, thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people follow you, get in touch with you, give you money if they're not doing that already?
They can follow me on Twitter. It's at Dudley Story. Do a search for Dudley Story. I come right up. Just don't get me confused with my father, because I'm actually Dudley Story the Third. So my father is the Olympic athlete. I am not, just to be
clear.
Are
you serious?
Serious, yeah.
Did he get a medal?
Yeah, yeah. He's an Olympic gold medalist in rowing.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you do a search for Dudley Story. I'm on top of Google searches, but he's like second or third.
He's got his own Wikipedia page.
He does, yeah. He does. Demosthenes.info is where I blog. Yeah, that's the primary two places that people can find me.
Sweet. Thank you so much for coming on. Great. I really appreciate it. It's good to have somebody who's in the education field advising people on education. That's super helpful. Thanks everyone for coming out in the chat room. You guys are the faithful. And thank you guys for tuning in iTunes or whatever you listen to this on. Be sure to rate us up. 5 stars is just that easy. Yeah, buy things from the store, shoptalkshow.com/store. And I think I'm a follower on Twitter at Shop Talk Show and do other things. And Chris?
Shoptalkshow.com.
There we go.
We forgot the sound effects. I feel like I should get a board too.